to thank everybody for joining us this evening. This is the business call, first of hopefully many, hosted by His Church at Lust Hills. This evening we are basically just starting off with the basics, ideas for how to start a business and get it up and running. We have a couple of guests that are going to start off this evening's talk, and our first guest is Mr. Richard Waters from Oregon. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. So I'm English, as you can probably hear. I've been self-employed for a lot of my life. I've had several different types of businesses, ranging from hand-drawn illustrations of cars. I had a little market stand in London for that. I was originally trained as a technical illustrator, so I did exploded drawings of, you know, engines and any mechanical parts. So I've been in the more automotive industry for a long time, and I had businesses doing that in England and Germany. And then I came to America. I did a little bit of that originally when I first came over here for some motorbike companies and a car company, doing freelance work. And then I got into my own, there wasn't so much technical illustration work and technical writing work in Oregon. So I got into web design. I have my own and still have my own web design business specializing in shopping carts. And in the last few years, my wife and I have started a yurt, camping yurt business, which is doing okay. And so we're trying to develop that. I'm trying to do less of the web design and more of the yurt. So hopefully that will develop further. So that's my background. And I'm married with three young children. And so the business I see as a future for them, really, for hopefully they're unnumbered. So they're going to need something to be able to earn some money and be able to live. So that's really the whole idea of that. Over to you, Scott.
Well, Richard, let me ask you this. You've obviously been somebody who started several businesses. You've been in business for a while doing different things. If you were going to start a business today, or maybe be the advisor to help some young individual or somebody who's never started a business before, irrespective of what it is, what would be some of the critical things that, in your experience looking back, what would you advise somebody who's just doing this for the first time in their life?
Well, I suppose the first question is, you know, what are you going to do? And if you're looking for something to do, that's half of it, really. Excuse me a moment. What is it you can do? Do you have a special skill or an ability that you can monetize? Because really that's all you're doing. You're monetizing either a skill that you have or a service that you're going to provide. So and oftentimes what you might be able to do is not right in front of you. I remember talking to get her name now. Terrible. She's on the East Coast there, and she teaches in prisons. And she was looking to start a business. She wanted an idea. She didn't know what she was going to do. Could she sell stuff? Could she do things? So I said, well, what is your skill? What are you best at? What have you been doing? And she's been teaching in prisons, and she has a lot of success with that. People are often asking her, how do you do that? How do you get people to react? How do you positively? How do you get people interested? So I said, well, this, you know, maybe this is what you can monetize, your knowledge. I mean, that's really what business is all about, is about knowledge. And so she could write a book. She could write some sort of education course, maybe. It could be in the physical form of a book. It could be an online membership thing. It could be any number of things. So often ideas can be right in front of us. We might not realize that we have a skill that we can monetize, that we can actually make money at. Other times there may not be any. So, you know, you've got to come up with the idea. Often it's an idea that starts everything. And once you have that, it all leads from there, really. I think it's very important that you have passion, that you enjoy what you do. I think that's very important, because it's going to take a lot of work to get this thing going. And if you have a passion for it, well, it's not really work. So they're the key things straight off the bat, I think, Scott.
And you mentioned something there towards the end that it's going to take a lot of work and effort to kind of get going. And so having that passion or drive is important. You know, when you say it's going to take a lot to get going, you know, you've got that experience now. What is it that you mean by that? And I'm not just referring to like the hours involved. And in doing that, do you, from looking back again now, do you think that there is a way that effort, all of that effort that's required to get going, can be shared within a family or within a congregation of record?
Yes. Yes, I think it can. I think that, and it's a great family thing to do. My wife and I have our yurt business. She does all the canvas sewing work. I do all the woodwork. So that helps carry the load. I think it also depends on if you're offering a service or you're offering a product. If it's a product, then there's a lot of work in product development. For instance, our yurts, we've made our yurt the first time because we wanted to have one, and then we got so much attention with it that we decided that we were going to start a business selling them. But the one that we made, and the one, you know, the one we made was okay, but it was nowhere near good enough to sell to the general public. So we had a lot of product development. A lot of time went in researching, finding the right widgets, the right pieces of strap, the right kinds of strap, the right canvas, and then finding the suppliers. That took a lot of work. We had to throw up a website. Okay, that's something I do anyway, but again, that takes a lot of time and perhaps new skills. I had those skills, so it wasn't so bad. So it's also then you have the marketing side of it. You know, how do you, the biggest, to me, most of selling is about, is a marketing exercise. Who is my customer and how do I find them? How do I get my product in front of them? And that's the big key. The internet, Google, Bing are fantastic ways to find customers, but obviously you have a lot of potentially have a lot of customers out there. But if you have a niche product, that's very good too. If you're doing a service, if you're providing a service, if you're going to do lawn care or anything like that, then obviously there's a certain amount of marketing there. How do I present myself? Do I cold call? Do I go around, the local area? How do I present myself? There's lots of things that need to be done. And then as things start to happen and start to grow, then there's all the associated time that's required in running the business. And that will be accounts. That will be, I can't think off the top of my head really, but there's a lot of, you end up doing a lot of things that, like for instance, I started in my technical publishing business in England, and because I love to illustrate, I love to produce documents and things like that. And that was fun for me. But very quickly, I actually became a manager and not an illustrator anymore. I became a manager of a business, and so I ended up not doing what I loved and ended up doing something that I necessarily didn't like doing. So you have to learn all of these different other skills: people management, managing your time, accounting. Marketing. So there's so many other facets that come with that business.
Does anybody else have questions that they'd like to ask Richard?
Richard, this is Dennis. I just wonder if you have any comments on you're selling a product, so you may have certain legal liability issues. What have you done with those?
Nothing as yet. Obviously you have to, I mean, there's insurance out there. You can buy insurance for that. It's obviously important, depending on what you're making, obviously, is that the product is safe, that are there any laws that you must abide by to sell those products within your state and perhaps at the federal level. I don't believe I have anywhere where I currently live. But you've also got to make sure that your product is well made and safe, and that you have plenty of warnings. If there is, if you foresee any kind of liability, it's very important to talk about that up front. Like I always say for my yurts, wood will dry out. You can get splinters. There is a possibility of injury through, splinters from the wood splitting. And if you're running your hands up the pole of a roof pole, a nasty splinter in your hand, you know, that is a liability there. So it's very important that you, you know, one, tell people they have to wear gloves, and two, to warn them of the fact that as wood dries out, it could splinter. So, yeah, I would think research at your local business development office in, or, you know, what do they call those? Those business gatherings that they have in most towns. They would be able to put directions for those sort of things. But again, searches on the internet too is another it's another way of doing it.
I think you're thinking of maybe the local Chamber of Commerce,
yeah,
or Better Business Bureau or something of that nature. They can help you with those kinds.
Okay, thank you.
I could add a little bit. All this talk about all these different aspects of the business that get a little scary for a lot of people who are thinking, well, I can't do all these things. But the reality is now, Richard, you know, he started one business and worked for other people, then started a business, then worked his way into management. But the reality with the yurt business, there was a lot of help. I mean, Richard has developed a fine product now with huge amounts, I mean, hundreds of hours, unpaid hours, trying to get this product to develop. But there were a lot of people that were supporting them at the beginning. You know, the first yurts we were made, we were making them for ourselves just to have a yurt because we had an interest in it. That's back to that passion thing. And that first yurt, we actually have just sold the last of our early yurts. Richard sold them for a television program. It's actually going to be on a television program. But we were willing to get rid of those because they're making better yurts now, and we know how to make a better yurt. But we actually held on to the very first ring that we made, and it is nothing like what we're making now. And so there's a progression there, and it's over a long period of time. My son's worked on it. Richard worked on it. We used our shop. He's in his own shop now. But that idea of community support when you go out to start a business is really, it's priceless. Because there will be people who have already done things like bookkeeping that you may never have done. Or people that have done things like illustrating where you might need a brochure. And people helping people can help you over those humps because there's this huge time sometimes. Depends on how complex your business is. If you want to go out, we got one of my daughter's fathers-in-law just went out and started a fruit stand. And it's doing gangbusters. Well, he was never in the fruit stand business, never ran any kind of business like that at all. So he's had to learn everything from the ground up, and you make lots of mistakes. But he saw a need, and he filled the need, and it's working. His son has just quit his regular paying job and is starting his own business. He started with somebody else who had been in that business, but he quickly excelled beyond that individual's willingness to make it work because of the fact that he has this work ethic, and he just puts in all kinds of hours, all kinds of time studying his product, studying what he's doing, and he's getting help from his wife, and he's getting help from other people that are suggesting, and he's willing to get those suggestions for everywhere. So the idea of starting a business by yourself, which is really the reason I broke in here, is a little daunting if you think you're just by yourself. But if you can get support of family and friends and congregations of record, you can approach this with a team effort. You're still going to have to do most of the legwork and handwork yourself, but you can have, like setting up a website. If you can't get help doing that, it could take you hundreds of hours to figure out how to do it. But you could get help that would streamline that in a matter of, hours. You could have something up. And then depending on what your product is, you might have to expand that. But, yeah, you have to be chief cook and bottle washer unless you have lots of capital. But if you've got friends and community and network, you can make it happen with a lot of moral support, emotional support, mental support, and even some physical support. And maybe even a friend might want to help invest in your business if they think it's really going to work. And so the idea of networking, which is why we're having a business call, is something not to forget in this. But anyway, I'll turn it back over to Scott.
Scott, let me jump in there, Scott. In my comments there, I didn't mean to obviously scare people, but people should know that I was a complete failure at school. I had none of these skills at the very beginning. They've all been learned either through help with other people or just through persistence and having to learn these things as I go. So attitude is important. You have to be willing to learn new things because you're going to have to learn new things. As long as you've got a good attitude, you will learn. That's where the passion comes in, because if the passion is there, then you won't mind learning these new things. And that's the key. But I was a failure at school, so that no one needs to think that I don't have any of these skills, I can't do this. Yes, you can. You can do it. You just have to spend time. You buy books. You do it. I remember when I was anti-computers. I got into computers with my technical illustrating business. Everyone needed one. I knew nothing about computers. I was actually against computers until I saw what they could do. So I couldn't afford to have an IT guy, so I had to buy books. I had to learn networking. I had to learn about computers. I had to learn how to set them up and learn software. I knew nothing about that. It was way out of my skill set. But I did it. I had the passion. I learned it because I had to. If I wanted my business to grow, then that's what I had to do. So if you have a good attitude and you're passionate, then these skills will come.
Thank you, Richard. I was going to throw in a little bit, you know, to add on to Greg, what Greg had said is, you know, this, all of the people that have showed up on this call this evening, we're in congregation right now. And there's a topic here that is motivating a lot of us to want to come together to discuss these things. And I remember a few weeks ago, we did have a pre-business call for some of the folks who had volunteered to speak tonight, and several of them came on. And I want to reiterate a couple of things. And actually, Greg, these actually came from you out of that call, and I think I'm going to repeat them on this call because I think they were very important. You know, that we're coming here not only for business, but we are all seeking the kingdom of God. We are all striving for that, hopefully. You know, and Greg, you mentioned that the business of the kingdom, just like everything in the kingdom, is to care about your neighbor's business as much as you care about your own. And if we take anything away from this call tonight and subsequent calls about congregating together, is we're here to support, love each other, and help each other become very successful. And as a body seeking to become Israel, that's, you know, how we're going to do it, is to support each other. And, you know, there's on that other call, there was made mention of two ways that we can learn. We're either going to learn from our own direct experiences, and some people call that the school of hard knocks, whatever you want to refer to that as, you know, you're free to come up with whatever colorful metaphors, or we can learn from others' experiences. And really, we need a combination of the both. If we just try to learn from our own experiences, like Greg mentioned earlier, getting a business up and running could take you years and years and years. But if we use these resources and what Richard's learned and what Bill's learned and what we've all learned in our lives up to this point, and we come together to help one another, just like Greg mentioned with the website, we can get something up and running very quickly. And that's what this is really all about, is a way to come together and support one another. So, Richard, is there anything else you'd like to add? And then maybe we'll get Bill started and then some others.
Yeah, Bill, go ahead. He can. I've said enough as an intro, certainly.
All right, well, everybody, Bill in Chicago. His background's a little different, but Bill, if you were going to start another business today, what have you taken out of your lifelong experiences and what you're doing in Chicago? And give a little introduction of who you are and what you do, and then get into it.
My name is Bill Conley. I'm 57. I run a business in Chicago that's called Division 8, which is a subcontracting division for commercial buildings, I was to start another business this year, I would start another business that would probably be based on the seed of filling a need. I think Greg mentioned it earlier. Business fill needs. And if I was to start a business, I would also consider the possibility of looking for a mentor. In other words, I might look at a business that is successful with no heir apparent or successors. I've just completed a business that was designed for what I thought were altruistic measures in order to help my primary business to grow. I began a mentor program with the City of Chicago for what's called a Minority Business Enterprise, MBE. This is part of the situation with the commercial marketplace where minority participation is required, primarily for government contracts, which I am heavily involved in. And I did start this business in the hope to mentor and was, let me just say that the business had dissolved itself because the political entity that would qualify and certify the minority business would not, because I was a 49% partner in this business. So they still felt that, having a middle-aged white guy behind the scenes was the person pulling the strings. So having ideas and having an understanding of the who, what, where, when, and why does not always fill a need. And at the time I started it, I thought I was filling a need for, in my particular case, a Division 8 minority partner entity, which is what basically was part of what they call a federal mandate for this kind of contracting. So I thought I was filling a need, but unfortunately politics came to play, and we separated cordially, and this was a black woman from the west side of Chicago. She has now received her certification, and she's on her way with her own business, of which I am no longer a partner, a minority partner, I should say. So I think that one of the things that I would like to say is don't be afraid to fail. I mean, you don't start a business with the intention of failing, but, you know, even the ring or the mast or the splinters or the selection of wood or the suppliers, or the supplier didn't tell you that was using certain products or was using a certain protocol or a certain supplier, vendor of mapping, and comes back and bites you, and ultimately you might have some liability. Don't be afraid to fail. It's one of the first things I would say, and fill a need. There are really a lot of difficult questions to answer on the front side. And one of the first questions that you need to answer is, what are your special skills, or what is your skill lacking? And I would also suggest that looking for a mentor and or somebody who has been in the business and may be able to take you under his or her coattails, and maybe thinking of an apprenticeship program with the potential of a buy-in might help, and to start small. I think that everybody should start small. I think you should start within your abilities. Your time is very, very important. I mean, working 40, 60, 80 hours, I don't think there's anybody that's been in business would say that they haven't put those kind of hours in, and in many cases, been paid less than so-called minimum wage in order to do it. So I guess, you know, not really look for so much the need for a return, in the initial startup, but, you know, filling that need to provide something of some value to another that is helpful for them to grow also. You know, that's a great reward in business, is to see your services or your products go into another's. So not necessarily a primary business, but maybe perhaps a secondary business or a support business, similar to somewhat some of the cottage businesses, some of the comments that Brent made, 15 very, very quick businesses that can be supportive, I think is another great thing to look at.
If you were, Bill, if you were going to find a, or seek out a mentor today, or mentors, maybe even more than one, you know, you kind of gave a few ideas, obviously, maybe trying to find somebody that's already working in this area that we have a passion for, that we'd like to start a business in. What are some of the other things that, you know, you would consider when you're trying to find somebody that, you know, so mentor is somebody that you're going to want to trust. So what would be some of the other things, other characteristics that you'd be looking for when trying to find a good mentor or mentors?
I would say a person's track record, you know, their fruits. I know there's quite a few people that, for the most part, get in business with opportunity. That being said, networking is very, very important. I believe that brainstorming is incredibly helpful with other like-minded people in business. There's many, many resources that, you know, can take you to the quote-unquote typical Better Business or Business Credit or a Small Business Association. There's several resources, but I've always felt these kind of conversations with people that have started business, have been able to grow businesses, have been able to, in some cases, sell business and start a supportive business. Mentoring it's all around, actually. I mean, you know, when you're in business and you have a passion for business, you're listening, and you have basic understandings of the financial aspect of it. So, you know, you have revenues and you have cost of goods sold or services provided, and you have expenses, and you do look at it almost like a ocean, if you will, or something like cooking. You know, you get your ingredients and you get in the kitchen, you start prepping. Sometimes the meal comes out, sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, so sometimes some of it goes into the disposal or out in the compost, so to speak. But I still think it's worth the effort to listen and learn and brainstorm. I've found quite a few sources of people that have helped me in the areas. And I think humbleness is really important, because I think I mentioned this before, I always preferred to defer to a higher authority. And by that I mean, for instance, sometimes I'll get myself into situations that are very technical, and I kind of know, but I don't want to say anything, so I will defer and get the answer to the people after I've had a chance to check, whether that might be some engineering or some calculations or some thermal performance criteria, something of that nature. I will defer, and I think that plausible, and I'm going to say deniability, but in essence, it's more going further and saying, I need another person to look at this. And the ability to do that, I think, whether it be business or life, I think it's an incredible blessing, and it's an asset that I would suggest everyone try to nurture and develop. When I say mentors, that doesn't necessarily mean somebody's going to be putting me under my wing, but at that point in time, when I need the voice of reasoning, whether that be behind another door, so to speak, or if that means a out-and-out brainstorm, I'm more than apt to want to seek that. And I find that it also fills a lot of the credibility areas that you're going to find starting a new business. It's a lot different if you have a business that you bought that maybe has 20 years running, even if it hasn't been profitable in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, you're still going to have a lot more acceptance with the persons that you're trying to fill needs with, because they're going to have a comfort factor, and the learning curve sometimes can be something hard to get over. It is a big hurdle for several people, but with expectations set, I believe in a business plan. I think it's important to put it down on paper. The ability to have others look at it, and the ability to calm yourself and take the back burner, so to speak, and take a back seat and look at it from an outsider kind of a viewpoint, because you do have a tendency when you start a business to have that passion and be very, very strong on it. Stubborn and, head started and not really being able to take a step back and look at it. And that can be, set you back. So I think being able to be flexible and have others look at it is a really good thing. That's why I think this is a very good forum for it.
Well, now you're bringing up another idea. You know, you just mentioned a business plan. I'm sure, most of us have probably heard that term used before. And somebody who's just maybe starting a business from the ground up, rather than coming in and purchasing an existing business, that business plan could be something that on paper, will help them decide, how to go about moving forward. We'll start opening this up a little bit. Does anybody who's participated on this call, and obviously Richard and Bill, please, also speak up on this. The elements of a business plan, how long, how short, what should it entail for people? What should they focus on? And then, obviously with a business plan, probably not the best thing to show to your mother, who has absolutely no business experience. Would you recommend, as far as mentoring goes, another kind of follow-up on that? There's a lot of organizations besides Better Business Bureau, obviously the local Chamber of Commerce, but organizations like Kiwanis, different social groups like that are usually amalgamations of local businessmen doing charitable works. Those are also possible resources to be able to find some people. Would anyone care to mention on those topics, business plans and other sources for mentors?
Gary Hardman from Idaho. I think I have a business. I've been in business for about 25 years. Different things I've owned or been a shareholder of. And I can't emphasize enough how important that is. You have a lot of energy to get started and to do what you think you can do, fill that need or whatever it is you can make or produce. And the temptation is to want to jump into the middle of that and start doing that. And because someone knows how to groom poodles doesn't necessarily mean that they'll can run a successful poodle grooming business. But this
this business plan is going to be your roadmap. And the way that a person's mind works, it's just the way God hardwired us, is that if you've got goals that you want to reach, writing them down kind of solidifies or crystallizes that in your brain. And then to have that, that's what your business plan is. It's your roadmap to your goals. And so you're going to see the all the details. You're going to put down every penny of every cost or supply item that you can envision. You're not going to be able to get every single aspect of it, but what this does is it puts that to bed in your mind, so that as you're talking to a customer, as you're trying to sell your product or whatever it is, that the money aspect of this is not in the back of your mind. It's not in the forefront of your mind. It kind of frees your mind up to focus on excellence rather than just money. And people are kind of funny. They pick up on things. They get a certain vibe from someone, and they're gonna pick. You know, if you are standing in front of a customer and you've got the potential to make a big sale, and what they look like is a big dollar bill sign to you or something, people are going to pick up on that. So you've got to be able to focus on your product or your service, how it's different from a competitor's product or service, and the benefit that customer is going to receive by buying your product or service. So if you've got that business plan already put to bed, you know that if you do A, B, and C, it's going to work. You're going to be successful. You can focus on demonstrating the excellence in your product and pursuing excellence in your product. So I think a business plan, even though it can be mind-boggling and you want to put your energy elsewhere to start building chairs or cutting grass or whatever it is that a person would like to do, even though you want to focus that energy on actually producing, you absolutely must have that roadmap written down, all the details put to bed before you start. That would be my advice.
Can I jump in here?
Sure.
Along the lines of a roadmap and the business plan, I guess what everything we're talking about is right on, but I don't know if this is taking a step back or if this is for a different call, but what I'm really concerned about is in coming up with the business plan, I have several ideas, and I have something I've been working at for a few years now. I haven't gone forward with monetizing it because I'm unclear how to go about that from the perspective of making this something that is going to feed the economy of the kingdom. This is what I'm really interested in, is those kind of conversations, and I'm just curious if that's part of this call or subsequent calls. That to me is, this is all great what we're talking about. I feel like the basics of the things that we've covered, that Richard pointed out, that Bill pointed out, and it's all good stuff. And I feel like I've been doing a lot of that with some things, and I'm really interested, and I'm wondering if others are thinking along the same lines. I think we are, about how to do this to benefit the kingdom, and how to do it under that umbrella as opposed to the other.
So you have some, what I would call some grapes. You got a little nest full of grapes, correct? That you're trying to get out, and you're not looking for. Are you looking for vinegar? Are you looking for a fine table wine, or are you looking for something that can be bought off the deli line? So right off the bat, the first question I would ask you: do you have any of these ideas on paper? Any of them? How many times have you taken that paper and whittled it down again and again? Do you have it to an outline?
Well, one is something that I'm already doing. I've been developing, if you will. But, you know, again, I don't know if this is for another call, and I don't want it to, you know, this may be for maybe me to discuss with other people. But I'm looking at one thing, and it's not the sole thing, but I'm a musician. And to this point, most of what I've done has been given away, and I am considering actually marketing it wider, using the tools of the internet to do that. But I'm hesitant to do that. To this point, I have only given albums away, but I'm doing something that's of a better quality in studio, that when it's done, I want to consider how to market that. But again, I'm concerned that, and then I have other businesses that are more revolving around my carpentry skills and other things, ideas for that stuff. But right now, this is something that I am curious about, how to do this. Anything I do, I am really wanting to do it in a way that it feeds the economy of the kingdom and not this other system.
The design development is completed and you've prototyped.
Yes.
So you have given these out as prototypes, pretty much?
Yes, I distribute CDs, playing publicly and giving them to people.
Well, I would say that you have a business plan.
You have
the idea. You've developed your idea. You've put it into action. You've put a prototype together, and you've distributed it. The only thing is the transactional side.
Maybe I could add a little bit here. When we talk about kingdom business, and I just posted on the chat room a web page that I'm working on that's actually already outlining this call. And it also has on it an outline of 10 parts to developing a business plan, which I put on a couple weeks ago when we had the first call. And it will eventually link to this actual recording. But kingdom business is basically this kingdom principle of the idea that if you go to start a business and you're in a network of people who care about your business as much as they care about their own, that they will be there to help you get started, and you will be there to help them succeed at their business. This is, starting a business by yourself is extremely difficult and challenging. And we can't take away that challenge, but to make it a kingdom business, first we have to have other people, and somebody might want to mute. First we want to have that idea of helping you get started, which is why we're having this call. This call is the beginning of that same concept. Then you're going to run in, you know, actually Richard, when he was creating his yurts, has run into some regulations in California for creating a tent that you can sell in California.
Greg,
much
Greg,
stricter than other places. Yes?
Greg, let's stop for a second. If somebody could please, if they're doing dishes or making some noise in the background, if you could mute your phone, please.
Yeah, there it goes. Anyway, this idea of realizing that you're not starting alone, and we see both Richard and Bill talking about this, is to examine what your resources are, and those resources will include other people. We're still getting a little bit of static. Somebody still needs to mute. But anyway, that is your resources, those mentors, starting apprenticeship programs are some of the things that were mentioned, becoming a part of that, looking for a business that serves another business, because you can a lot of times get a lot of help from the business you're trying to serve, because they're going to tell you what they need you to do or produce. I was talking to somebody else in the network who's a very good welder. Well, I'm talking to somebody in our local community that needed somebody to weld a stainless steel gas tank for his airplane that he's building in his garage. And there's the people who normally do that way out in the Midwest. It's an actual girl who does it for a major company that supplies people building planes who want to put in an extra gas can. And she can't keep up with the demand. She can't weld them fast enough. And she just ships them out as soon as she has them made. They just give her the specs. She welds it. She sends it out. There's niche businesses everywhere that you can get into, but you won't see them. But when you get into a network of people and you start brainstorming, as Bill was talking about, suddenly somebody says, well, hey, I know a business you could get into, and you wouldn't have got that information. Just sitting there thinking, I can't think of a business. That's the kingdom aspect, is the fact that other people want to see you succeed. If you get into a network of 100 people where 50 of them have started businesses before and everybody wants to see everybody succeed, you have just developed probably the greatest advantage to succeeding in any kind of business whatsoever, and that's based on Kingdom, on that networking. Now, to get into some of the aspects that I happen to know, Rob in California is going into, yeah, we will handle a lot of that off this call and on minister calls and PCM calls, et cetera. But we're looking here on this as the ground breaking. How do you even begin to approach the idea of starting a business? And in Rob's case, I know he's already started that. He's produced something, and he's learning to produce them better. And then he is learning how to market them on a one-on-one basis. Well, now how do you market it on a larger scale? And that's going to take teamwork to figure out how to do that. And so anyway, I sent that network link off, and I'm going to improve that link as we're going, and I'll turn this back over to Scott, although I'm still hearing a little bit of recording noise coming in the background if somebody's not muted. And I'll mute myself.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, I think, is that Rob? Are you still on an open mic? Do you have a follow-up question?
No, I just turned it back on to say thanks, and I turned it right back off, and now I turned it back on again, but I was muted through all the racket there. I'm not sure where that's coming from. But I appreciate that. I kind of suspected that I need to discuss some of these things on a more one-on-one basis with some folks, and that'll happen. So I guess we'll just let things keep flowing while we're going here.
Lee's my name. I'm calling. Lee's my name. I'm calling from Melbourne, Australia. Can everybody hear me?
Yep, I hear you.
Is that you, George?
Lee is the name.
Good day, Lee.
I've just been listening with great interest to everybody's comments. And it appears to me that a lot of the ideal attributes of the ideal business is to be found in network marketing. I don't know how many people have experience of that, but it certainly involves the success of the business being dependent upon the success of other people and everybody is helping everybody else. The mentors are built in to the system. The training's built in. There's no upfront investment. It's a global business. The amount that you can make is basically unlimited. Your net profit is pretty much the same as your gross profit. You have no real estate, you have no debtors, no creditors, no stock to mention, none of the normal overheads of a conventional business exist in network marketing. I ran a conventional retailing business for 12 years, employed 12 people. I started out thinking that I owned the business, but it didn't take very long at all before I realized the business owned me. Network marketing, Robert Kiyosaki has said that, in his opinion, every family in the country should be involved in a network marketing business as a second income stream. Donald Trump said that if he lost everything, he'd look around for a reputable network marketing company and get to work. The ability to basically earn an unlimited income without any financial risk is the totally compelling appeal of this type of business. You don't need to have stock. The training's all provided. The mentors are there. You follow people that have the runs on the board, that have a track record. There is a very, very clear plan, business plan. It's just a matter of working out what your goals are within this established and totally successful formula. What are the views on this type of business?
I think that's the part of what I'm looking at with music is I am connected to music networks, and there are a lot of services out there that I can step into that I've hesitated as far as monetizing what I'm doing. So these are the things that I'm thinking about, and I think that the online networking is definitely that's the main thing that I'm going to be looking at for this particular project.
Yes, I think to have a business which is a part of the evolved economy is the way to go. Something that can be built at least partly online, that's global, that can be fitted around the other things that have demands on your time. Everybody's busy. Again, network marketing fits into all these desirable criteria. For example, and the opportunity is quite amazing. There's a young 25-year-old personal trainer. She has taken her income in the business that I'm involved in from $500 a week to $10,000 a week in just under 12 months. So she's on a $500,000 a year income, and she's put that together in less than 12 months. And she's not on her own in this. There's quite a number of other people in Australia that have done similar things with this business. The business is to do with health and wellness, so it's obviously very much a growth industry with the epidemic of obesity and poor health that's out there. So it's a way of not only securing a stable, ongoing, passive income, but it's also a way of helping people who are struggling with health issues. And again, Robert Kiyosaki said he believed the business of the 21st century is where network marketing and the health and wellness industry intersect. So for what it's worth, I think it's something that is worth everybody at least checking out.
Yeah, I'll come in here for a second. That is an amazing phenomenon that's actually occurred. There's a lot of different definitions of network marketing, but the internet, I know Richard could speak to this, is that without the internet, he would not be able to market the yurts at the rate that he's now marketing them. And the same, of course, is Mevo web business is directly, which is a shopping cart business, directly connected to the internet. Some of the products that he is now offering on his yurt that are byproducts, you know, like he sells a stove that can go in the yurt. Well, he never touches the stove. He doesn't make the stove. He doesn't box the stove. He doesn't even mail the stove. But people who buy yurts want a stove. And so he's found a manufacturer, and he gets a percentage of the sale, even undercutting what other people might purchase it for, because he gives a real good price, because all he has to do is take the order and pass it on. And it complements his business. He provides more service to his yurt customers because he provides that stove. And the same thing is when I mentioned this girl in the Midwest who can't keep up with her orders of welding stainless steel gasoline tanks for airplanes. And people building airplanes is huge. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people building their own airplanes now. It's a huge niche market, and they need little custom-made parts. And somebody who's a good welder can make those parts. And there's all kinds of things, like you mentioned, food and health and these things. Now, some of these businesses are a little higher regulated than others, but this internet allows you to get into marketing products that if you were stuck selling only to local people on your street or in your community, you couldn't do. So that's why that can be very much a part. Now, I'm not sure what Lee's talking about when he's talking about, it sounds like he's talking about somebody who has already got a product, you find the product you like, and you just simply are marketing it by going out and trying to get it visible.
Yes,
on the internet.
Yes, not just on the internet, but certainly the internet and social networks like Facebook and et cetera can be used to great effect. It's about leveraging your time. So, for example, if I build a network that's marketing, if I introduce these products, and it's an American company that I'm working with called Isagenics, they're very much into health, wellness, cleansing the body of toxins, and they're also at the cutting edge of the latest advances in anti-aging. Now, if I go out and introduce these products to somebody else, they form part of my network. And let's say I can only put in 10 hours a week into building my business. But if I introduce somebody who also is interested in building a business, some people are just interested in consuming the products, which is fine, but a percentage will be interested in building the business. So if I introduce somebody that is interested in doing that, and they put in 10 hours, there's now 20 hours a week going into my building my business. Now, I act as a mentor and a sponsor to that person and help them get started. So it's, and if they work harder than me, that they can be more successful than me. It doesn't matter where you are in the network, you are rewarded in direct accord to the amount of effort that you put in.
Right. So, basically, what you're talking about is what we commonly refer to as multi-level marketing.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's
and
correct,
so,
Greg.
And yes, that's viable. We have some people in the network that does that now for, like, Young's Living Oils. And when they started out, that went very slow. But now they're actually right up there, and so that is another option.
It takes a little while to get it going. I had something to throw out there, Greg, that you mentioned, as an example of what, throughout the Living Network that could be done. You know, you mentioned, Richard, you're now getting a supplemental sale from, some sort of a wood stove or cob stove or, a pellet stove or whatever it is that you're marketing as an accessory to your yurts that doesn't even come from you, that comes, drop ship from another third-party manufacturer. You know, those kind of things could be something that could be developed if somebody else has a passion, like you're mentioning, Greg. You know, there may be some welders or fabricators in the network, or a family that's interested in that, or maybe several families in a congregation that are interested in that, could at some point, if their product got to the point where it was, something Richard could use, now that focus can come off of that third-party vendor, maybe, just throwing something out here, that is now a within the network of a core family that's building this stove that Richard could switch, as an example. Those are kind of those support businesses that were mentioned earlier. We find, and I think this kind of ties in with some of what Rob's talking about a little bit. I know where Rob's going, and again, that's really not for this call, but we're looking at ways to get people more independent that are looking to kind of move in that direction and still do something that is helping, and that whole idea of the kingdom business is I'm caring about your business as much as I care about my own business. So finding those support businesses that are so wide ranging from even, like the idea I'm throwing out is that somebody else in this network would start making some sort of pot-bellied stove that would be marketable. But Richard could then say, look, here's the style that goes well with yurts. And in that back and forth exchange between this fabricator, and maybe there's more than one style. And now Richard could post that on his website of here are these accessories that are made within the network of other congregations and families, and now that kind of ties into an economy amongst this whole living network that could be global.
All right, and that incorporates the idea that Lee's bringing up of this multi-level marketing, even though it's not the formal multi-level marketing that we hear of like Amway and Young's Living Oils and a million other people that have got into it. And there's all kinds of different multi-level marketing deals that have better or poorer, offers in their system. But the reality is that's what Richard was just doing because people were asking him about stoves. He went out and did the legwork and tried to find a manufacturer that he could deal with and that he thought produced a decent stove and was extremely portable because these are camping yurts. He was looking for portability. And there are going to be other products that he's going to be looking at because he knows his customers want them. So he kind of becomes the one-stop shopping. So he's actually getting into that multi-level marketing because he's doing what Bill was talking about, where he's actually supplying a sales platform for somebody else who wants to sell his stoves. And so they're helping each other just automatically because necessity dictates it. And what we're doing from his church with this whole preparing you in this business course, and that's why I'm trying to keep this a little bit of 101 introduction, is to get people to do that. Do what Bill says about brainstorming. Do what Lee says about multi-level marketing. Do what they're all saying about looking for a mentor because the mentor's built in. If you're selling his product, he's going to do what he can to make you successful, and you're making him successful because he's helping you make your customers happy. So anyway,
it is about a mindset change.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry to pick on you a little bit, Richard, but I'm going to use you as an example again. If Richard is starting to develop an idea, or he's starting to hear people talk, well, what about this, you know, from his customers? You know, that is something that could be spread through the resource managers of the network, which are the ministers, to say, look, here's what is coming about in the yurt business that Richard's looking for. Does anybody in a congregation have a passion to start providing this service or product? And let's get it developed and use Richard as, you know, he's the one that needs this. But now it can be marketed in other ways. It can be tweaked a little bit. It could even be private labeled. You know, we used to do that tons of stuff, you know, get things private labeled when I ran a business down in Southern California called ARBCO. We dealt with huge paper and Stadler Mars and different corporations like that, and we would have things private labeled so it looked like we were producing these things. You know, so it could look like it's being produced by Camping Yurts, you know, but it's actually being produced by this third-party vendor.
Yeah, and the brainstorming that I was going to mention also, Richard, I think that, and please correct me if I was wrong, but somewhere along the lines, I thought I had heard that you also were into catering. Is that correct?
This is going to be a spin-off from this yurt business. We started selling the yurts. I mean, I still find it, you know, amazing that it's successful. How long it'll go on for, I don't know. So we want to diversify. I think once your business is established, you don't want to be relying on one stream of income. That's why a residual in multi-level marketing is always great. I think, and just to interject here, I think multi-level marketing is a whole episode on its own, and I think there are other people well qualified to comment on that. But we wanted to diversify away from just sales. So last year we got into rentals. We've managed to pick up a couple of TPs, so we now rent TPs and yurts at events for organizers as organizational, you know, for backstage stuff. And we want to develop that further. But we want yet another stream of income. We don't want to be reliant on one. If something happens, then we don't want to, you know, find everything disappears. So our key was to try and get another stream of income for the yurts. But how we knew that people love yurts. We knew that people love being in yurts. So how could we, you know, monetize that? So we came up with the idea of having a big yurt, much bigger than anything that we've done, like a 24-foot yurt with four doors. You go in through one door, and then there are three other doors that lead into small yurts. And then in all of these yurts it'll all be Persian rugs on the floor, floor cushions, low tables, and then on the outside of that we'll be selling tea, coffee, and snacks, and then people go in inside the yurt. This will be at festivals, yurt, you know, events and things like that, public events. And then people go into the yurt and they'll just chill out in there, drink their coffee, drink their tea, eat their snacks, and then just hang out. I have no idea if it's going to be success or not. The business plan is kind of in my head. I've never written a business plan. I wouldn't even know where to start. But I think a lot of my business, I have business plans, but they're in my head. And I jot things down, I sketch ideas and things like that. But that is important to do that. So
absolutely. So yes. So food enters in, correct?
I'm sorry?
The scheme. Food.
Yes.
Communicating also community food. Yes.
To begin with, I don't know. It's a communal thing, but I don't know if that's the direction you're going in. But it's the food that we're going to provide to begin with is just going to be bought elsewhere and then sold as is. We're not going to create any of the food ourselves.
Right.
As
right.
Is.
But yet the plan is to scale wise with the yurt to increase the yurt size, correct?
For this particular thing, yes. To make it the biggest one we do right now is a 20. It's new this year. So the biggest one will be a 24 foot. Whether we sell that or not, I don't know.
Okay. So again, the niching or the cherry picking. First and foremost, I most certainly want to talk one on one and get the girl from the Midwest's phone number that can weld. Finding a stainless steel welder here is would be a big blessing to me.
But most businesses springboard. They springboard off of ideas. So the question would be, Richard, what if? And I could probably defer to all of us here and every one of us within, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes would have a what if. And these are the blessings. This is a blessing of the ability to have a business, to have a supportive product. In fact, when you talk to the people that are allowing you to sell the heaters as a broker, i.e. broker and or distributor, and do they set your pricing as far as those heaters, or are you able to put whatever overhead and profit you like on them and still be below their quote-unquote list pricing?
Well, they're actually wood stoves rather than heaters, but they have a retail price. I can charge whatever I want. I cut the price so I am the cheapest on the internet for that particular kind of stove. So if anyone searches for it's called a Nico stove. If anyone searches for that, I will come up as the cheapest. I'm not having to make a living at that. I'm just trying to encourage, bring new people into my site just to see, the yurt. The yurt will make me far more money than any amount of stoves that I can sell. So, and I want to increase this. I want to be. I'm getting trade and wholesale accounts with other camping manufacturers of gear and stuff. So I want selected stuff I can sell on my website, almost as a loss leader, just so that I can get people who have never thought about camping but are into camping gear and need stuff. They see my advert on Google Shopping or Bing or whatever, and then they come to my site to buy it, and they think, oh, camping gear, I've never thought of that. I didn't even know they existed. So this is my next stage of development, will be my shopping cart for ancillary camping gear that will be bare bones, hardly no profit in it at all. And I can get my money back on the time spent and the shipping and all that kind of stuff. But it's really designed to get people in front of my website to see the yurts, which is my main item.
I think what people, what we're taking from this is the potential, like Bill called it, the what ifs, the potential of coming together with support services, which lead into other opportunities, can really multiply very quickly through a network of congregations which actually kind of goes to help create an economy that opens up a lot more opportunities for alternatives, which is kind of what Rob was kind of leaning to. Right now, those alternatives are very limited because there isn't this network of congregations and families that are kind of moving in this direction. This is one of those aspects. I think it's so important that everything's going to come together kind of all at once. I mean, you guys that have been doing things in business, same thing. When the crunch time comes, that the project is supposed to be done or the product is supposed to be shipped out at this time or, whatever it is, it seems like there's utter chaos for 90% of the time from the time the order came in, 90% of that time to when the order goes out, it's utter chaos. But that last 10% of the time, it's like everything comes together in harmony, so that it's done when it needs to be done. And then you take this big whiff and go have a pizza and whatever, and I think that's the same thing for the network. It's very slow and chaotic, and then, gradually things start coming together, and then wham, all of these aspects from, helping families get businesses started or finding existing businesses. That's something we haven't even really broached a whole lot, coming together in congregations, with an existing business that might be for sale in the local area, that might be a better fit instead of trying to start something from scratch, to support businesses that, can help what others are doing throughout the network. These are things that are why it's so important to connect with the congregations, connect with the minister. The ministers are resource managers, if you will, the treasures of the kingdom are the people, and it's through those ministers communicating with each other, from communicating with those families, that we can start to connect the dots to make things come together better for people.
Yeah, let me add something here. When we first started creating the position of PCM, Personal Contact Minister, on this network, which was a virtual network and email groups, one of the things that, and it's still up as an encouragement, is to find out who's in the network, who's on your group. Well, we just talked today on a group, and they were, a lot of people were kind of surprised. There were 56 people on that one group. And they said, well, we don't ever hear from them, not from all 56. But the reality is they were supposed to make a list of who's on the group, what their skills are, what their interests, what they want to bring to the group. Well, it doesn't really happen so much at the personal contact level, although it does to some degree. We wouldn't be having this call now if it wasn't happening to some degree. But on the minister of record level, that happens a lot more. And as Lee was talking in his multi-level marketing, it's about time. You can't have this call with people all over the country and everybody put in the input that is really valuable to the network. The network is a living network, and every minister talks, every minister shares, every person who is in a congregation of record shares with his minister, and that minister is health, education, and welfare. He's the small business administrator for the people. That's kingdom business, because we want to see your family succeed as much as their own. So when we find out stuff about you, it sounded like Bill was saying this, but Bill was looking for somebody who was a stainless steel welder. Did I hear that right? We'll have to put them in touch.
Yeah. You said you had a Midwestern gal, I think.
Well, there's a Midwestern gal who is, but she can't keep up with the work she's doing. But I have another welder up in the North Midwest who is an excellent welder. I don't know how good he is at stainless steel, but I think he knows about everything. He's been doing it for years and years and years, and he's a professional welder. But he wanted to start his own business. Because he works full time, but it's concentrated in the week, and he has a lot of days off. So he wanted to do that one thing where he's doing something for the other 4 days of the week.
And the springboard thought that I had was you've got a gal that's welding, and she can't keep up with orders, and you got a guy up on the North Shore,
right?
That can do it, but doesn't have a shop to do it in.
Yeah, he's not that far away from having a shop to do it in. He could manage that too. But he was just looking, what could I do? Well, I think he has the skill. It's just a matter of connecting opportunities is what the network really needs to be doing. And and you can't do that unless you communicate. So I think if we start doing this, start showing some of the success stories, because we're actually having the success stories, but they're not directly connected to the network, but we have people helping people and making it possible that businesses are a success, not to take away from their individual efforts, but there's a lot of people helping other people, and that idea needs to be caught fire in America again, because it's been sorely neglected. We've kind of got a dog-eat-dog attitude towards business, and that's going to be out there too, but the idea of everybody wanting to see everybody in a network succeed, that's really what made America great, because communities helping people in their community succeed. And we have that in our small town community out here. People will buy from a local business, even though they might be able to get a little cheaper in town, but they want to support the local business. And I could go through lots and lots of stories that I've just heard recently. Somebody just set up a website for his new business, and he had never done that before. And they got a preliminary one up, and in a very short period of time through networking with their immediate family. But then talking to him with people who have a lot of experience in that, they're already excelling and improving it, and it's moving up in search engines. And so that's people helping people. And they're not on the payroll. They're on the should we call it the love role? They're lovingly helping each other. But anyway, I'm going to turn it over to Scott. I don't know how long we are on this call, but do we want to sum up, or do we
want to keep going? Well, I want to give, you know, this. We are about an hour and a half in, but I wanted to give others who've come on the call that maybe wanted to share some of their initial, you know, ideas of how to inspire others with starting a business. If you haven't had a chance to talk yet, I know we've heard from Lee in Australia and Terry in Idaho. Thank you, Terry and Lee. Rob in California, Bill and Richard, and of course you and I, Greg. So if there's other folks that would like to speak, please do so.
If this is Terry again, and if no one else will speak, I wanted to just mention what I do, my businesses are centered around repair and custom manufacture of surgical instruments. So I work with stainless steel every day. I weld and machine stainless steel. I can do that here in North Idaho. I have people that work for me in the Oklahoma City area. They're also able to do that. If our business is the medical field, but if someone did have an interest in producing a part or getting started in something, precision welding or something like that along those lines, I would be willing to provide support services either through us doing it or helping someone to get started in that area.
This is Terry H., right?
Terry H., you got it.
Yeah, okay. I know who you are, Terry.
Okay.
If I could just add that this multi-level marketing business, one of the other advantages of it is that it is becoming truly global. It opened in Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, and China. Last year, it's going into Indonesia and Vietnam in early this year. It's already in New Zealand, Australia, the US, Canada, Mexico, Colombia. So it's truly a global opportunity, and in that it spreads understanding and goodwill between people of different nationalities, which I think fits in with Kingdom principles really well. Because each business its success is based on the businesses below, if you like, in the network. It is everybody helping everyone else. And my personal experience is that when you become involved in people's lives, as you absolutely do in this type of business, and if you're helping and working with them to set them financially free, it becomes a very open and welcoming environment in which you can sow kingdom ideas to people who maybe to that point have not gone down that path. So it is a very fertile environment in which to spread the word.
Thank you, Lee. Is there anyone else that would like to share their thoughts and ideas on this very basic idea of starting a business, things to think about?
I just want to thank Richard. I was the one that had that conversation with you during the summer, and it was because of that conversation that I realized that although I believe that I didn't have a skill, talking with you you know, was able to see that what I was good at naturally could be a skill and could be marketable one day. And, you know, always wanted to thank you for that. Although I haven't really done anything about it, I always have it in the back of my mind that it could be a business. This, and it is a skill, and thank you.
Well, maybe, Isabel, as we go through these calls, you know, that, you know, if that's something that you're looking at, you know, trying, like Richard said earlier, trying to monetize that skill, maybe as we develop these calls or go through these calls, you know, that will happen, help you, you know, through this congregation of people coming on these calls. You know, that would be a great success story if we were able to, you know, have somebody who wanted to kind of start doing this as we go through these calls, and maybe more than one that wants to, you know, start moving forward with the ideas that they have, you know, through these calls, to be the actual practical example of how it can work through a support system like these, like this conference call.
This is Farak, just a couple of tidbits, if you will, from what I had heard in the initial, call to this now busyness is the word I prefer, busyness call, and as well as this one. We spoke, someone mentioned mentors and where to find them, and I was thinking, or thought of immediately, retirees. Somebody mentioned various places where you'd find business professionals, but, you know, these places would include retirees or other places where retirees might hang out. How often have we heard of the person who retires and then is essentially bored out of their gourd, or individuals who perhaps have been successful in business, but who whose children, or maybe they don't have any children, but if they do, children who didn't want to follow in their footsteps, and they have, you know, scads of information and experience, and, you know, they would potentially jump on the opportunity of, you know, pouring that information in somebody who was, you know, wanting to put into the building of their business with that individually. So, carefully established and built his or herself. That's one of the things that I thought of in listening to folks. Another is, and I've heard this expressed in terms of a business potential for you, is, you know, doing something that you're passionate about. And I don't think anyone, you know, doesn't mean or would exclude this in expressing it in that way, but I think it warrants bringing out and emphasizing that passion doesn't necessarily, at least in the beginning, it doesn't necessarily have to be for what you're doing. You could be exceedingly, you know, gifted or capable in an area. You might not like to do it, but you're good at it. But the reason that you'd be doing it for is something you're passionate about. You might be a skilled welder. You might not like to weld, but for what the application of that skill of welding to welding could do for building the network, you'd be willing to you know, suffer the displeasure of doing something that you don't like for the greater gain. So, you know, don't discount, you know, what you're good at as a possible business for what it can do, not necessarily for yourself, and this is in keeping with kingdom principles, but what it could do for others if not providing a place for someone to come and learn as a, you know, mentor, what's the term, starts with an A, apprentice relationship, then, you know, the seed money for helping others in the establishment of their businesses, or in other kingdom endeavors like
you know, getting equipment for Summer Lake in the preparing of radio programs and getting the word out through a syndicated radio setup, whatever the proper terminology would be for that. So, and then also the business plan, the mention of that, you know, I like Richard, I've never operated from a business plan other than what I had in my head, but there is, you know, and even if that is something that, even if that's the way you normally would operate, if you are in need of, I think it was Gregory mentioned, investors or people wanting to participate in your business or in the establishment of your business, maybe they're so far away they can't help physically, but they could help monetarily, preparing a business plan, having that something in writing that people could go over and crunch the numbers and make sure it's a viable something, even if they're not going to get into it with you, they could counsel you based on the numbers that, you know, this isn't really, you know, going to work out perhaps as you were thinking. Have you considered this? That sort of thing. It gives a basis upon which people can counsel left, right, forward, backward, what have you. So that was just some things that came to mind, and I'll give up the floor.
Well, you know, Nitz, on some of the things you brought up, like the retiree thing, that's a great idea. But that got my brain going with, you know, as we do these calls, and I just also want to mention that, you know, just because this is, I'm the one hosting this first one, other ministers of record, other congregations could be the ones that host a call like this. But if we find people in your local area that are willing to share their experiences or about a specific topic, like, you know, if you'd run across a retiree or somebody who has a lot of experience in, you know, one aspect of a business, you know, either in supporting a business, the accounting, you know, all of the different aspects that come into business, marketing, merchandising, you know, all of that, you know, we can invite them onto these calls to be guests. That's another way of networking with more and more people that are, you know, kind of outside of the Google groups and the congregations of record that are already in existence, and helping to find others. So again, other congregations can host a business call. This is just, you know, trying to get the ball rolling with something. Hopefully it'll catch fire and we can congregate like this more and more often. Is there anybody else that hasn't had a chance to speak yet? Terry, I've still got you in my head, so I'll give you back the floor, but let's see if other folks that haven't had a chance to talk would like to share their ideas.
This is Nitzan Parak again. Just really quickly, I was sharing this with Gregory the other day, and I just haven't gotten an email out, but somebody mentioned the handyman thing, or I forget at what point, perhaps in this call, I believe, but there is an outfit that began some number of years ago, I believe, in the Netherlands, and it's catching on worldwide, mostly in other quarters of the globe, not so much in the United States. There's maybe 15, 20 places, but it's called Repair Cafe. If you go online, repaircafe.com, it's essentially what it is, you know, anybody can, you know, get the word out. They don't have to host it themselves, but they can just get the word out, turn other people on, and someone else can host it. But, you know, they can host it too if they want. But it's a tremendous way of getting out and mixing it up with people in a friendly atmosphere. And what it is you get a bunch of people together in a facility that perhaps, offers, donates their space. Like we had one here locally, in a Methodist church, just happened to be where it was, but people who are skilled in various ways, whether woodworking or sewing or electronics, computer, knife sharpening, I attended one of the 15 or so, of the only 15 or so in the United States, at least they were registered at the site. One of them was just 7 miles south of here, And so you have these places, this place set up where all these people come and volunteer, all these people, skilled people come and volunteer. And what it is people bring, you know, whatever it is that they have that's broken, and they get it fixed for free. But it's done in a way where they're not only getting the thing free, getting the things fixed for free, but, you know, they're chatting and sitting down in chairs across the table from the person who's doing fixing the thing for free. And learning how to you know, think and approach fixing things so that they can do some of this stuff at least themselves and not be reliant on others. But you know, just a tremendous, again, way of helping, getting to know people, community, and so I offer that out. Repaircafe.com. Thanks, Tom.
That's great, Nissan. I just checked it out. It's actually .org.
Thank you.
Terry, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I wanted to just encourage people, what Lee was talking about, the multi-level marketing. And I think that multi-level marketing is a tremendous way for a person to get their feet wet in business and learn some very, very basic business skills. I think that sometimes people have a tendency to recoil from opportunities like that because of, you know, someone they knew 20 years ago that was selling Amway or, you know, some kind of thing like that. But that whole industry has evolved long, long ways, and there is an opportunity there to get some very, very valuable training. Could make some money along the way too, to pursue a passion, a different passion that you had, kind of like what Nissan was talking about. You may find that you're able to bootstrap something that's your true passion.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with that, Terry. The industry has evolved, and of course, people do use this as just a platform to go on and pursue other passions.
Well, again, we're approaching a two-hour mark. I would again open this up if there are some folks that haven't had a chance to share yet. Please feel free to just step up, and if a couple of people talk over you, we'll get that worked out. So don't be shy. I know it takes a few minutes to come off mute, and you want to be patient and kind of courteous. But go ahead and speak up, Dennis or Claude or I know you. See your guys in the chat room there. Do you guys have anything you'd like to add? I don't want to pick on anybody, but. Just the names that I recognize in the chat room.
Yeah, this is Dennis. I can't really offer any suggestions for starting a small business. I come from the corporate world, so I'm looking to start my own small business. Finding this call very valuable. Thank you.
Well, we're glad that you participated this evening, Dennis. And I know you've got a lot of experience doing stuff. So I'm sure that you would have a lot to offer to share as we go along with these calls. So again, I hope you'll join us again. I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping it up then. Richard and Bill, thank you very much for appeasing my call to have you gentlemen go first on this first call. I really appreciate your willingness to help out. And everybody else, Lee and Terry, and I'm trying to see some names here that are Nissan and Greg, and I'm trying to find my list here, and Rob in California, and everybody that participated in the call, and for everybody that listened in. I hope it was something that you got something out of. Again, it'll be recorded, so if you want to come back and listen to it later, and hopefully maybe we'll get somebody to clean it up a little bit, make the recording a little better, edit some of the dead air space out and things like that. And look for that on your Google Groups. And if you're not on the Google Groups, which I think most of you are, but if not, make sure you join one of the Google Groups. You can do that at hisholychurch.org. And find a local group to join.